Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us is New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, a Democrat. Peoples-Stokes serves Buffalo's 141st Assembly District. Welcome back. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you, Majority Leader Peoples-Stokes.
Thank you, Alan. It's my pleasure to be back. I'm always excited when I hear it. I'm going to get a chance to talk to you.
So, Crystal Peoples-Stokes, Letitia James issued a scathing report on the Cuomo administration undercounting nursing home deaths. So, your reaction, should the state health commissioner Zucker resign, as some have called for?
Well, you know, I think that's a decision that the commissioner should make on his own. I'm not sure why there was a decision not to count deaths that didn't happen in the nursing home, even though they folks contracted the virus in the nursing home. I'm not sure why they made that decision. But one thing I do know for sure is that the vast majority of those deaths did happen in for-profit institutions. And I personally believe that for-profit institutions have a different level of commitment to the patient because I think they're committed to their bottom line first. And bottom line commitment first doesn't lead you with the best operational system.
You know, I've been around a long time. This nursing home thing, this is not anything new in New York State. We've had nursing home scandals over the years. Is there any way out of that?
I think there's a couple ways out of it. The best way out of it is to really reimburse at higher rates. But that will call for federal support as well as additional state support to reinvest at higher rates for Medicaid patients. Because clearly, if you're only getting $50 in a for-profit institution and you still have operational costs, you're not going to spend 42 of it on the patient care.
Mm-hmm.
You're just not going to spend that much on it. So I think that the first thing that needs to happen is the reimbursement needs to be increased. And secondly, there should really be some real penalties for violating the kind of care that people deserve to have. I personally know that we've had, you know, several institutions within my district where they're rated very poorly. And with some pressure from the state health department, they increased their productivity and began doing a better job. But, you know, these things always slip back off when it ends up coming back to that bottom line. And so I think two things, there needs to be stronger oversight and enforcement, and there needs to be an increase in the reimbursement rates.
There's an old story that Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner said on the 2,000-year-old man, I don't know if you ever heard that record, in which Nick said, is it true that Robin Hood stole from the rich and gave to the poor? No, said the old man, he stole from the rich, you stole from the poor, and he kept everything.
I never heard that one.
And one wonders whether, if you increase the amount that they get, whether they won't keep everything, you know. I mean, how do we know that they'll use it correctly? And I think your point is very well taken, that you really have to be looking at them all the time.
And you have to require it, and if they don't do it, you have to close them up.
Good point. Let's go to the governor, as long as we're talking about the governor, and that's always fun. As you know, every once in a while I get a chance to talk to him.
Before we do that, you know, can I just take this opportunity to really applaud the Attorney General for her work in this area, because quite honestly, it was a report that told a lot, and it's things that needed to be told. And so she did her job as the people's lawyer, and I appreciate her for that.
Do you see her as a possible governor soon? If Cuomo were to leave, would you see her as running for governor, Letitia James?
You know what? I hadn't really thought about it, but yes. Yes, I would. Because, you know, she's a really caring person from her core. So, yeah, I could see that. Although I don't know that's on her viewpoint, but, and I certainly had never thought about it before, but I don't see the governor leaving. Where is he going?
No, that's a very good point. For a while, we were thinking he might go with Biden somewhere, but that isn't apparently going to happen.
I doubt it.
So there's a spate of new polls, including the Zogby poll, which show the governor doing very good against all comers, you know, like 60-20, something like that. Does that surprise you that he's still that popular?
It doesn't surprise me at all, because think about this, Alan. Last year this time, we had no clue of what was about to hit New York State in terms of this virus. We had no clue. There were some people who knew at the federal level. They didn't say a word. They didn't begin a process to tell us how to get it done. They didn't put any rules in place to say you can do this, you can't do that. Here's the best way to deal with this. No, they let us think that it was a hoax, a Democratic hoax, to have some impact on their campaign. And as a result of that, if in fact the governor had not stood firm, met with science on a regular basis, dealt with experts on a regular basis, he figured out how to get us through this. Now, was it perfect? It was not perfect. Quite honestly, no one else could have done it perfect either. There are a lot of Monday quarterbacks who know what how the game should have went after the fact. But quite honestly, he stood and got New York through one of the darkest times in our history. And so I can see why people would still rate him very highly in spite of the attacks that he begins to receive, not just on a partisan basis, but that he receives, quite honestly, you know, from his own party. Everybody has the idea of how things could have went, should have went, what should have been done. But in fact, he got us through it. And so for that, I think he deserves credit.
You know, I have a nickname for him, which I don't think he likes that much. I call him Andrew Tough Guy. You know, he can really be tough on people.
Well, you know, yeah, please, throughout the whole pandemic, I know people all over the country. And, you know, when you have to stay home, what you do a lot is you talk on the phone.
Right.
I talk to my friends, my family all over the country. Everybody wanted Andrew to be their governor because they were seeing him on TV every day pulling New York through this. And it helped pull them through in ways. And so, personalities aside, got to give credit where credit is due.
Yeah, well, maybe that's why in the Zogby poll, it's 65 to 22. And it's not only against Letitia James, the same kinds of numbers against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, 67 to 24. That's an incredible testimonial. You know, he wrote that book very early, sort of taking credit for his leadership. And I've teased them about it and said, maybe that was a little early, you know, because of what's...
Yeah, I think that was a little early and quite honestly unnecessary. Everybody already knew what a great job he had done.
Yeah. So you're the number two in the assembly. How is that going? In other words, is there a competition between the assembly and the governor? There are certain things we're keeping our eye on, for example, whether or not we raise taxes on people, which certainly Speaker Hastie and others have said is a good idea for the very rich. What do you think?
I think the speaker is right. I don't think the taxes should be as broad-based as many think, but I do think that, you know, increments on the millionaire's tax is warranted. We've got major problems in New York State. The deficits are real. These are not made-up numbers. But there's no way that we're going to entirely tax our way out of it. So that's why we have to be reliant on federal help. And thank God for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. There's an opportunity coming to help New York get through this problem without totally taxing itself out of maintaining a population. And so I quite honestly am encouraged by the direction that the assembly has taken. I know sometimes that we do disagree with the governor, but that's okay. Even in families, you know, sometimes I disagree with my brothers. But at the end of the day, we're still Democrats and we still have the best interests of the state of New York at heart. And we'll come up with a plan that will begin to deal with that.
So what about the relationship between the Democratic Assembly and the Democratic Senate now? How's that going?
I think it's going well. I'm impressed with their leadership, and I'm impressed with our leadership. You know, their challenges, we both have a lot of very new members who were elected in June and didn't get an opportunity to serve formally until January. That's a real long time. It's the first time it's ever happened. And so, you know, a lot of our new members do come with prepared agendas, which, you know, most members do come with that, but normally they don't have such a long period of time to get activated and at the ground level. So it's an exciting time. It's good for all of us to get this new energy as well as to revive ourselves and get ready for the future of what, you know, the world has for us, what the state has for us. And I think that we're going to be prepared in both the state assembly and the state senate.
We're talking to Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples Stokes, a fabulous politician, I have to say. And I say that in the best way I can about somebody who knows their craft well. So let me ask you this. How about the oversight function? We all teach as political scientists, we all taught all those years that it's the job of the legislature to oversee the executive. How's that going?
You're speaking directly of the executive orders that the governor has the authority to put in place.
That's one thing. I'm thinking, how do you hold him accountable? Is he being watched by the assembly? In other words, are your committees and others looking at him and saying, this is okay with us and this isn't?
Right. I would just invite you to listen to one public hearing, and you'll probably hear the things that people are disagreeing with him more than the things that people agree with. So, yeah, I do see that. And I think the budget process is precisely that process that frames that oversight into this is our view, this is our view from the people's perspective. And so our oversight of your budget is not the same. We don't agree with this. And so we're going to change it. And this is what our changes are.
And who meets with him? Does Speaker Hastie meet with him and Andrea Stewart-Cousins meet with him and three people in a room, or is that changing?
Actually, you know what? It's never been really just three people in a room. It may be physically, bodily three people in a room, but Hastie can't go in there with one point of view. He has to go in there with a point of view of 107 people. And first of all, he's got to listen to all of them. And then he has to craft that into something that comes out as our agenda. So this is not easy work that he's doing. Andrea, you know, she has a bit of a smaller number to work with, but the challenge is still the same. You got to listen to all of your members first, and then you take what they say to you into that room. If you go into that room, three men, two men and a woman, five people, six people, however you go in there, you're going in there and you're representing 107 voices. And so, you know, I know it sounds really, you know, really media savvy to say, oh, there's three people in the room, they're making all the decisions. No, they're not. I've never been in that room, and my decision has been in there multiple times. And so I'm okay with that. And I do believe there is oversight.
Do you think that the budget hole that we've all heard about can be filled? How about a stock transfer tax? Where do you think that money is coming from?
Well, I like the idea of a stock transfer tax. But again, you know, we've got 107 members in our conference, and 107 of us have to kind of say that in order for that to move forward. The money will come from both the federal government and the proposed increase in taxation that we'll come up with during our budget process.
We are speaking with Majority Leader People Stokes. Let me ask you this. When you get into that huge conference room, I've been in it, in the Capitol, and, you know, you say he's got to listen to all those people, all those Democrats. How does that work? Do you all sit around? Can you paint a picture of it for our listeners?
Well, it's a challenge. But it was in a very beautiful room over in the Capitol with a very long table where you probably had about 20, maybe 25 or so members seated at this very long table. And at the head of it would be the conference secretary, who is now Assemblymember Pam Hunter out of Syracuse. She would have two people who would assist her in both identifying the members who had raised their hands as well as getting them access to a microphone to speak. Well, now this is 2021. We're not in that little room anymore because it's not socially distanced. There's no way we could socially distance in there. And quite honestly, we're actually in session remotely. There's only three of us that are required to be in the chambers. That's myself, the minority leader, Mr. Goodell, and Jeff Aubrey, who's serving as the speaker pro tem. And I should say Mr. Goodell, who's serving as the minority leader on behalf of Mr. Barkley. Three of us have to be in the chambers. Everybody else can be remote. No more than 30 people in the chambers. And so this conference that used to be in a beautiful conference room, the speaker's conference room, is now done by Zoom. Members still do have an opportunity to raise their hand and add value to whatever the conversation is.
Let's talk a little bit about the census and redistricting. Obviously, you've now got three Democratic institutions, the governor, the assembly, and the Senate. You know, when it comes down to sitting and drawing districts and we're going to lose one congressperson, maybe two, obviously the Democratic agenda is going to be realized. Or would you say it's going to be absolutely fair?
It already is fair just by the notion that we have a Democratic government. That's not because we decided it should be a Democratic government. That's because the electorate decided that. So it's already fair. So to assume that it won't be fair just because we're all Democrats, I think is a misnomer. It's unfair. Quite honestly, if you think about the number of years that, you know, it hasn't been all Democrat and we had to live with spaghetti districts in order to create opportunities to elect a Republican, we shouldn't have to do that anymore. We should craft districts, not just focus on who's going to be elected, but focus on what's in the best interest of the people and their ability to communicate with their elected official.
Let's see if I get this right. There are many more Democrats in New York State than there are Republicans. So therefore, if you allow a sensible way of spreading out the districts, you get more Democrats elected than in the old days where the Republicans
maybe
what you call spaghetti districts, running through county after county, a little tiny line. So this is going to be the first time in a long time you can do that, right?
Well, they did that because they wanted to have their registered voters in that district.
Right.
You know, good elected officials can talk to anybody. It doesn't matter what party you're enrolled in. And if you have the right message and you bring it to people in the right way, you don't have to pick a district that's all Democrats in order to win. As a matter of fact, there are a number of seats right now that people thought were always going to be Republican that are not anymore. Because the voters can think. They do hear what it is you're saying. And I think we need to give them some credit for their ability to discern who's the best person to represent them. A person who's constantly speaking negativity, or a person who wants to bring a progressive agenda to bring us all together as one New York.
Let me ask you this. Betty Rosa is now the new education commissioner. Is that good news?
Betty Rosa is a very committed educator. I'll tell you that. She's committed to doing a great job. She did well when she served as chancellor, which I now believe Lester Young is. So I'm sure she'll be fine.
You have a number of important, in quotes, phone numbers on your website, including immigration services. Can you talk about that for a moment? What are you hearing from your district about ICE and immigration services now that President Biden has taken office?
Well, I haven't heard a lot of complaints as I did before. But you do know that, you know, Buffalo is a refugee settlement center. And so in my district, I have a lot of awesome services that are provided for these people who are seeking asylum. Some of them come here just because they're waiting to get to Canada, and some of them end up staying in Buffalo. And so they have done, you know, a great job of adding to the value of our community and to the culture of our community. And we're grateful to have them there. So, yes, immigrant services are important. You do want these people to be protected. You do want them to have access to some sort of quality of life that, you know, values them as being a human being.
When it comes to upstate New York, which has a lot of Republicans, is there a philosophy that you guys are following, Democrats are following, in order to get those people to convert to a Democratic way of life?
Well, I'm a little conflicted by that question because I grew up in a household. My mother was always Republican and my father was always Democrat. They didn't have a different look at values or, you know, principles. They looked at them the same way. They just happened to be in a different party. And so I really do think that there's always opportunities to suggest, work for, and include inclusiveness outside of party lines.
So how did you become a Democrat if your parents were Republicans?
Well, my dad was a Democrat. My mom was a Republican. I actually kind of just based on listening to people who were running for office, like Jesse Jackson was running for president. I couldn't vote for him if I wasn't a Democrat in the primary, right?
Right.
So if you pay attention to the people who are running for office, it's more important. That's more important than it is in what their party is, in my opinion. And so, but I think it's a failed opportunity on behalf of some in the Republican Party who want to consistently be divisive, anti-criminal justice reform, you know, anti-supportive people, want to believe in the Bible, but only for yourself and your family and not for anyone else. I mean, you know, I think it's a mistake for that party. I'm from Erie County. There are a lot of Republicans in my county, and I personally know a lot of them, and they're not all white. Some of them are black. But they generally don't vote for Republican candidates who espouse negative energy. But they are still Republicans. You know, people focused on a good energy, then it wouldn't matter what party you're in.
I want to remind people that we're talking to Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, a Democrat, of course. Majority Leader, I remember the day that I came home and said we were having a school election and I was going to vote for Eisenhower like the rest of the class. And my mother looked at me and she said, "No, dear, we're Democrats." And I've often told political science classes that I was teaching, and that's what we call political sociology, when your parents tell you what you are. Let's go. We're running out of time, but let's talk about higher education. Many higher education institutions are suffering because of the pandemic, especially the community and private colleges. So how valuable is the SUNY system to New York State or a SUNY Buffalo to the city of Buffalo where your district is?
Well, University of Buffalo is one of the largest economic drivers in Western New York. There are 20 other colleges of higher ed within the area, both private and public, because ECC is there, as is Niagara Community College. And so the higher ed is a huge economic driver in our community. Some of our business community now is working on creating tech jobs and advanced manufacturing jobs. All these have a relationship to higher ed, and they all interrelate to our capacity to maintain a decent economy. And so it's going to be a struggle for higher ed, as it is for K through 12. It's going to be a struggle there as well. Things are so much different now, post, I should say, during COVID, as, you know, much different than it was pre-COVID. So we'll have to adapt with the times and change things so that they provide the same impact and value to our citizenry so that we can continue moving forward with a positive economy.
We were all talking about it, Black Lives Matter. We have a sign in front of our house. Other people have a sign in front of their house. And all of a sudden, you're not hearing much about it, maybe because of the COVID. Have we let it go?
No, I don't think we've let it go at all. And I think what COVID has taught us is that every time we let it go and try to, you know, minimize the lives of some people because they don't look like our neighbors, it just ends up costing us more as a society. We cannot all move forward if we're willing to leave some people behind. So I do think that, you know, Black Lives Matter, they always have. And it's glaring that, you know, that they don't. And you can see the impact of that, not just in education, but you can see the impact of that in healthcare as well. And as it relates to police reform, police are public servants. You know, they're public servants, much like I am. We have a lot of ethical rules and things that we have to follow. They should have rules and things that they have to follow as well. I think America needs police. I am not one of these people who say let's defund them. I would say maybe perhaps we could restructure some of the dollars. I know yesterday the mayor of our great city had, I want to say, 10 or 12 officers who have completed additional training as it relates to mental health issues. That kind of thing is important. So when you say defund police, I'm not the one who wants to decrease the number of police we have. I might want to change the skill set that they bring to the table. And I might want to say that you cannot bring whatever racial attitudes you have in order to deliver your service.
Is it going fast enough, Majority Leader?
I do. I do think it is going fast enough. I mean, could it? If we speed it up too fast, you'll get too much pushback. And what you want is results. You don't want results tomorrow if they get put in tomorrow and they get shut down because it wasn't thought through well enough. I think you want results at the end of the day. And I can already see some of the benefits of talking police reform in the state of New York and, quite honestly, in my own city of Buffalo.
We have two houses of our Democrats now, and the governor is a Democrat. But I guess there's really nothing, considering the Supreme Court, that can be done about the proliferation of guns in New York.
That can only, in my opinion, that can only happen at the federal level, because I think no one has better gun reform legislation than the state of New York. But, you know, there's no blockades between Pennsylvania and Ohio and New York. So people can literally go to Ohio and, you know, buy whatever they want to buy in terms of weapons. And they can bring them in their car back to New York. And in fact, they do. They stop in front of any urban high school and let the right people know that they have a trunk full of weapons to be sold, and they sell them. That can only happen by changing either Ohio state-by-state changing laws, which is unlikely to happen. And so it's something that needs to happen at the federal level of government. I am prayerful that all of these young people who came out and insisted that there be some changes as it relates to gun reform after Florida and after those places where all those children were killed in high schools, those folks are voting age now. I hope that they are putting their vote on the issues that matter. And at some point, we have to be able to say to any government, we come first before business. We come first before the manufacturing companies that are producing these weapons. We come first. And if you can't figure out how to put them in control, then we're going to need to put somebody else in office who can do that. I'm hoping, I'm thinking that that could make the difference in this election and for forthcoming elections. Because I think when young people realize the power they have and their ability of collectively voting and saying one thing at the same time, they will never stop doing it. They will always be engaged at that level. And it won't be that we go again and vote in in 08 for an Obama, and then the next 2 years we don't show up and vote for the Senate elections. You must be voting consistently. Our civics laws, civic education hasn't changed since fifth grade. There are multiple levels of government at every level. And if they're not all saying the same thing at the same time, then they're doing nothing.
We are talking to Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. For those of you who are not familiar with what the Majority Leader does, there's the Speaker and then comes the Majority Leader. A lot of people have titles, but the real power lies with the Speaker and the Majority Leader. Do you ever feel like you have to herd cats to be the Majority Leader?
Well, I will say that I feel like I have to have a really good relationship with all of my colleagues. And so that if they have concurred in our conference to support an agenda that the Speaker and we have collectively come up with, then I'm going to have to make sure that when it comes to the floor vote, that they are still there. So if some people want to entitle that herding cats, they can. I would entitle it having a good working relationship with the folks that I work with.
We're out of time. Our guest has been the wonderful New York State Assembly Majority Leader, Crystal Peoples-Stokes. Majority Leader, I love having you on the program, and you're welcome back anytime you want to come. So thanks so much for joining us.
You're so welcome, Alan. Thank you for having me. You know we got to have our marijuana talk soon.
That's right. We're going to have our marijuana talk. It's going to happen, isn't it?
Yes.
That's what I thought. That's what the governor says. But he said it before, and so we'll see. So in any case...
I believe in this time.
In any case, let's see it happen. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right, you're so welcome, sir. Have a great day. Stay safe.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.